over and above individual enterprise. And this bleeds over into many areas. Group projects, group responsibility. Society's responsible, right, instead of the individual, for the behavior of men. Collective will is more important than individual decisions of conscience. And here is where you're going to want to separate, especially. You'll want to teach your children before their youth, before they're 12 or 13, how to make decisions of conscience. It's not by a social conscience, not what society or what popular will decides is good or right or lawful. Basically, it's what your conscience decides is lawful and unlawful. But this idea of social pressure or social conscience overrides individual Christian conscience, the will, the popular will of the people, which is democratic and which is majority rule, which is unbiblical. Collective responsibility displaces individual accountability. Well, it's what everybody else is doing mentality. Rather than, again, accounting for your own disposition, accounting for your own decision, accounting for your own actions. One of the things that you have the privilege, sacred privilege of doing is dealing with the heart and soul of your own child. You don't want really anyone else to do that because you want them to hold them accountable before God. And this is a delicate thing, that you don't deal with the outward man, you deal with the inward man. And it's internal, not the external, not they made me do it, not they caused me to do it, not society, but the internal consent, the internal will that you're dealing with. That's your privilege to deal with. It ought not to be done by strangers to your children. I call this very delicate heart surgery. You don't go in there with a hatchet. You go in there with the Word of God, and you don't go in there as a wounded mother or parent with hurt feelings. No, you go in there impersonally and ministering to your child. Collective well-being, this is essential to the well-being of the individual, that the welfare of the group will provide the welfare of the individual. And we know this is a lie. This is sort of one of those Satan's twisted truths. It's the opposite. The well-being of society is dependent upon the well-being of each individual. And it's not the well-being of the group that my well-being depends upon. And so this is the world turned upside down. That's incorrect. But this is the idea of acting in socialism, the practice of it. And if we look at these ideas, we'll see that these ideas are, I think, practiced in all levels, not just as a nation, but nationally, but I think we can see it in smaller spheres. We can see it in business. We can see it in, a lot of, I think, church ministries are built on socialism, and we're not identifying it as such. But what else would you expect from people educated in socialism with socialization standardization? It's a natural consequence. So let's get down now to the alternative. That's the problem. This is the times in which we find ourselves. So what is the positive alternative? It's not enough to expose. One of the things that we don't want to do is simply expose error. But the Christian way is you displace error. The Christian doesn't attack or assault. The Christian displaces wrong thinking with right thinking, supplants it. And it doesn't substitute anything until it finds something better to put in its place. You never take something away before you find something better to put in its place. That's how Christianity has moved through the ages, through the centuries. And it's the world's way to cause revolt and violent overthrow. But Christianity is gentle in its change. It's not traumatic. And you must be kind to yourself in what you're doing. That when there's error, God will bring it to our minds when we are prepared to change. Isn't that the truth? He's so patient. And so with the way we teach. So if we're going to have, what is the alternative? If it's not progressive education, I want to propose that the positive alternative to this is something called American Christian Education. And this is our philosophy of education. I'll identify how that's reasoned through. But instead of, before we have, let me remove this and go back a little bit here. What is it we're going to do instead? And then I'll explain that one here. American Christian education is this triangle. And our goal is not socialism. It's individual self-government. Another way of saying it is independently dependent upon God. We want an individual who's independently dependent upon God for all his earthly needs. Isn't that what we wish? To be able to stand. An individual self-government is the goal of American Christian education. An individual governed by God alone, who knows how to be governed by God from within. And we'll illustrate what that is in a while. It's built on two ideas. It's based upon a view of history, and I call it providential history. It's built on two legs, our understanding of providential history or a just view of God. And what do we mean by providential history, or just view of God? We view God as ruling and overruling in the affairs of all men and nations. All men and nations, not just some, all of them. Now, what is more powerful, to rule or to overrule? What connotes greater power, to rule or to overrule? Isn't overruling manifest greater power than someone simply ruling? You can rule, but if somebody can overrule you, then whoever can overrule you, your rule, is greater than you. And that's the point. God is greater than all rule in the universe. He can overrule, and he does overrule. Not only is he simply ruling, that's his sovereignty, but he is overruling in all the affairs of men and nations. And that's a view of God we want to teach, because that determines whether or not we're going to be governed by God, how well we're going to be governed by God, how well we consent to God's government. If we see God as less than overruling, then the probability of our consenting to God's rulership and overrulership is tentative. And it also is built on an idea of government. This is why we're going to teach about history and government. Your view of history and government will determine how well you produce self-government in your children, first in ourselves. Do you see government only as civil or only as external? Or do you understand that government is God's idea and that it begins first with self before it is ever external? That government is first self before it is civil. That there are primary and secondary spheres. There are spheres of government, the internal and the external. Mathematically, you have zero government internally, it's going to require 100%, right? 100% external control to rule you. If there is 50%, if I could measure it, 50% self, it's going to require 50% external, civil. Does that make sense? So what is internal determines what's external. And if we rebuild self-government in our nation, we'll find less external government in our nation. The only way to decrease big government in any nation is to increase what? Individual self-government. That's a natural equation. It is not by force. It's by natural consequence. So if our goal is to have less external control over our lives, we must raise up a people who have God ruling, more self-government in their lives, less dependency upon the state, and more dependency upon God in their lives. Does that make sense to you? That's a very natural law of government. It's historical. It's been documented. And so this philosophy of Christian education, called American Christian education, is critical to our call of to home education. What are we doing? Are we producing and increasing self-government in this nation, or are we increasing socialism in this nation? And even if it's Christian socialism, it's still socialism, isn't it? Even if it's nice socialism, we have the best socialism in the world. Everyone's coming to die here. I mean, they're dying to get here, literally, because we have the best socialism. I sometimes think some of the ways we can eliminate some of the illegal immigration in our country is to diminish the socialism we offer, especially in California. If we lessen the giveaways, there'd be less efforts to get here. If you came here simply for individual enterprise, that's another thing. But for socialism? But we've got the best kind, because it's the Christian socialism. We do it willingly here. You know? We give willingly. Now, what's American Christian education all about? Again, let's go back. What are we dealing with to get there? Not socialization, not standardization. We're really dealing with character and conscience. If there's anything that's avoided by secular education, it's one's character and conscience. They don't want anything to do with that. They simply want conformity to uniformity. But the result, again, is independently dependent upon God for all their needs. This is called individual self-government. And what do we have to do to get it, to achieve it in each child? We have to deal and put in there the qualities of character that make us a people. If we look back to America's history, before 200 years before Washington, I would say the greatest fruition of American education would probably be in a Washington and a Sam Adams and a of that nature. But if we would view historically what we find true in the first 200 years of America's history, we'll find faith. And if you want to instill steadfastness, you want to see steadfastness in your children, increase their faith and trust in the scriptures and in God himself. But steadfastness comes out of faith. Being steadfast, being holding fast, being immovable is being steadfast. But that only is a result of faith increased. Faith cultivated. How do you cultivate faith in your children? How do you grow faith in your children? Faith in the Word of God, and faith in divine providence, faith in God himself and Christ, their Savior. If we want industry, productivity, finishing what is begun, that's industry, then you're going to have to teach diligence. How are you going to cultivate diligence? It's the internal quality. Faith is internal. Steadfastness is external. Industry is external. Diligence is the cause for industry. Diligence is care. Care about things. Being careful. Being careful. That's a discipline. And that will produce industry. Sometimes we go after steadfastness, industry, and Christian care without dealing with the cause. That's why I have those arrows there. That the cause for all these outward things, such as steadfastness, industry, and Christian care in our nation, have a spiritual unseen cause. And we still see semblances of this. We see loyalty. We see, again, productivity. And we see a lot of charity. But it has to come from somewhere. And not from the state, but from faith, diligence, and what we call brotherly love. which is natural, like love between brothers, which is a natural affinity for one another. Where do these ideas come? From where do these ideas come? They are scriptural ideas. They are Christian ideas. And so where do we go to build these internally in the future generations? Now, we think of conscience, a quality of conscience. This is what you're aiming for. This is why you choose the materials that you do, the lessons that you make. You're addressing what's unseen in your children. You don't know what's unseen, but that's what you're addressing, the inner part. Their conscience. You're looking for a person who has liberty of conscience. You want to develop in your children the internal quality of having liberty of conscience. I use Acts 24:16 to describe what a conscience that's at liberty is. A conscience that's void of offense toward God and man. That's what you want them to be able to have, a conscience that is void of offense toward both God and man. That's free. That's a free conscience. When they know, they can put their heads down each night and know they've not offended God nor man in anything. And that they've made it right. And that's what you want to instruct them to be able to do. How do we train a conscience? And that liberty of conscience will know how to make decisions of conscience. That they obey the inner, this is called the inward judge, which is their conscience. A Christian conscience that knows how to judge things lawful and unlawful. And we'll discuss more freely later what that might entail. But the quality of individual self-government determines the quality of character and conscience that you develop through your curriculum. Through your curriculum. That's what you're addressing. Not performance, but their character and conscience. Strengthen what they have in the unseen spheres of their lives. So now we get to this idea of your philosophy of education. I want to say right here, too, that what makes a nation a Christian nation, why are we so concerned with individual self-government? Well, you'll hear this idea repeated. America is the only nation in the history of the world that's built on the capacity of the individual for self-government. Our nation is the only nation in the history of the world that's built on the capacity of the individual for self-government. Why is that significant? Self-government is Christ's way of governing, isn't it? Christ indwelling. Ruling from within. That's Christianity's form of government. America is a Christian nation because it's built on Christianity's form of government, self-government. Do you see that? America is not a Christian nation because the majority profess Christ. That is not the case. That is not, evangelism does not, or many conversions does not, or multitudes coming to Christ does not make a nation more Christian than another. It's the form of government. No other nation yet is built on Christianity's form of government, self-government of the individual. That's the phenomena. And who did that? Not man. God, through divine providence. God, in providential history, made that happen to the glory of Christ. Do you see that? To build a nation on Christ's government to the glory of Christ. A testimony as to the power of the gospel to establish a nation on gospel liberty, self-government. Man could not have done that. Man doesn't believe such a thing. God did that to testify of Christ. What can be done? Does that make sense to you at all? That's what makes us a Christian nation, our form of government. Self-government is Christianity's form of government. Now, this is why American Christian education proposes to produce individual self-government for the sake not only of ourselves, but of our nation. is the means to restoration. If we produce greater and greater self-government, we will bring our nation back to its foundations. And this is all your home, this is what your home education is all about. The self-government of your family, the self-government of your home, the self-government of your children. It's really about you, isn't it? Not about your children. It's about your willingness to be governed by God through Christ. First in the area of education, but then in every other area as well. Right? You've never studied as much as you've studied. You've never searched as much as you've searched. You've never been had to be as disciplined as you've been because of your children. God's used your love for them to draw you to these ideas. And that's the hope of our nation, is what's in your family, what's going on in your family, what's going on in every home educating family. God's blessing America with families that are willing to trust Him for their children this way. And so you deserve to have a philosophy of education, right? You deserve to own a philosophy of education. It's only the Caucasian who goes and then thinks, right? You jump in a pool, be sure before you know there's water in the swimming pool. It's just too painful for me to watch. So, but that's why God uses you people, right? You do. You're doers. Okay. Some people are thinkers and never do. And so, what would you have? If you're going to have a biblical result in education, you're going to have you must have these ingredients. You must have biblical content, which is your curriculum. And you're all shopping for curriculum, right? Every year about this time, everybody's shopping. Every year is something new, isn't it? Something new. And after a month, you chuck that. And you get disappointed. And that's a terrible thing to have to do. It's great suffering. But you're looking for courses. You're looking for subjects that will give you a biblical result. But you also need a biblical approach. Not only do you need content, but you need a method, because you cannot get a biblical result by applying unbiblical methods. It's not just content, but methods as well. And I want to make it simple for you. It is simple. What is our goal? Your philosophy of education entails a goal. Your aim is to produce in your children self-government, individual self-government, dependence upon God. Independent dependence upon God. Now, how are you going to do that? And I want to suggest here that all you owe your children from birth to age 20, by the way, do you understand that the biblical demarcation between adulthood and youth is age 20, that's when God says they stand on their own two legs before me. No longer may they look to parents as the cause for any of their actions. We're no Freudian here, okay? No psychology here. I get that from Numbers 14, 29, and 30. Remember when the 12 spies came back and 10 said, don't do it. 2 said, we can. God can. And God said, and the people murmured because they believed the 10. And God said, I can't take you in. You'll have to die here in this wilderness. And he said, all who are 20 and up. Say, oh, okay. Weren't you glad if you were 19 or 19 and a half? I mean, 20 and up will be responsible to me for murmuring. And if you murmured and were 19, you can say it was your parents, but not when you're 20. Do you see what I'm saying here? So I agree with God there. Okay, if you say 20, God, I'll say 20. Not 18, 20. So you have 2 more years if you have 18-year-olds. Just say, God says, right, you die at 20, not 18, okay? So what's legal is one thing, what's biblical is another. So what do you owe your children? You owe them only the foundations. That's all you owe them. They owe themselves an education. Do you understand this? All you owe them are the rudiments, the first things to be learned, not the last things. You don't owe them a college education. Now, there is a there's a progression of thought here. I would say, just throwing this out, and of course it's subject to question, but by the time they're 12 or so, they ought to be now able to be self-educating. When I look at what Benjamin Franklin and John Q. Adams were asked to do as youth and children, that by the time they were 11 or so, John Adams was able to tell John Q., his son, to read such and such a book and do such and such a thing. He was directing their education, but not personally. He was self-educating by the time he was 11 or 12, and simply and guided by his father and mother. And so I think he learned history by reading history aloud to his mother, but nevertheless, as a boy. So your goal is by the time they're 11 and 12 to guide them, and that they're responsible to build on the foundation you've laid. But we're wanting materials for that. I know that. And we're working to see what's practical. And so this is what we're doing with parents in California, is bringing their children to the point where they can just be guided. You're not to sit at the table, kitchen table, till they're 20. But I would say till they're 11 or 12, right in there. But what do you owe them first, then? What you owe them are the first principles of every subject, the rudiments, the first things to be learned, which is fundamental. What's fundamental to mathematics? What's fundamental to language and reading? Just the fundamentals. That's all you owe them. And then, what's the methodology? And I think the methodology is this. It's called biblical reasoning. That is, they're able to reason from the principles of every subject. Not only do you teach them the principles, but you exercise them in them. You teach them observation, and then you exercise them in their observations. And so you reason, that is, they resolve problems, and they reason from the principles to their own conclusions. They're not teaching is not telling. Teaching is guiding. And so this is, in short, what a philosophy of education looks like. It has an aim and has appointed particular subjects. Some subjects you don't need to teach, all right? Because by tradition of men, you've done that. But you just consider, what is it that you owe them? And give only that, what you owe them. So you know why you're teaching, you know what you're getting, or what you're feeding them in order to achieve that, and you're also knowing what method you're going to use in order to achieve that self-government. And that's it. We keep it very lean and mean, all right? Very, very, you know, you cut the fat, so to speak. You don't have to teach a lot to teach a lot, or a long time. You have laundry to do. Go do it. All right? But how do we do that? Again, I don't want to be just facetious about this. So let me just share with you what I have shared with others. I think the classical work on what we're talking about is in Mr. James Rose's guide.